So I was going through some old files and I actually found the Q&A section from my TEDx talk that I did 11 years ago. The audio is so-so, but you can kind of hear kind of the audience questions. And it was just cool to look back at, decade plus ago, kind of the way I was answering some of these questions, what's been consistent, what's changed. And anyway, since I found it and it's in an audio only format, I thought I'd share it with you guys here. So from 11 and a half years ago, this is Baby John answering questions after my little TED talk for TEDx Tampa Bay. Enjoy.
That's what they say.
Hard work,
I earn my pay.
Hard
work, do it every day.
I'm gonna take the time we have remaining to just open the floor for John to answer questions, mingle, talk with John, share ideas, give him some feedback on what you think. Is he crazy? Is he the most, is he the wisest person you've ever met? Is he maybe the future? Open it up. This is John. He's very approachable. Ask him questions. Give him ideas. Somebody in the back.
I actually went with a church group. They were going to they actually there's a group that was there that's been working there for some time and was going to just stay and help out with them and. I had the opportunity to go, and it was hugely transformative. I think so much of my life since that experience has been a chasing after that thing that I was so jealous of that I saw in that community.
Go ahead.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think you have to raise. Just blurt it out.
Yeah. So. So yeah. So I appreciate it, and you remind me of one of my closest friends. So I have to say that just off the bat. Appreciate that. So I'm gonna throw this out there. How do you most effectively disseminate? So you've got values, you've got passions, you've had to contemplate how do these values and passions get disseminated. And there's good ways and bad ways and very independent ways and very community ways. So how do you most effectively disseminate?
So our house has a we have what we call like a home church thing. We have a community dinner every Wednesday night where people join us. People from the neighborhood often will come for dinner. They come other nights, but this is like an open dinner night. And then we have people from around, people from our college classes or our work or wherever. They're welcome. Our house is open. It's usually like crawling with people on Wednesday nights. And that's a way of learning with us, sharing with the community that lives there. Something like this, you know what I mean? Like taking every opportunity I can to maybe speak up or have a little bit of a voice. It's been difficult, it's been secondary in a lot of ways, as much as I don't know that to me it's been something of a pursuit more than something to teach or whatever, but as time goes on, I think that there is a need to have a little bit of a voice, and it's something I'm learning. I mean, I don't know, meeting people, you know what I mean? But it's about people, so it's about relationships, and I don't know. I meet some people, and I'm honest, so.
Anybody else got anything for John?
Yeah. Do you have any formal training in mental health issues or some of
No, I've personally been, it's been mandated to me to be in counseling when I was a kid or whatever they put me in. No, but I it was. But I so I saw what they did. That's pretty good. But no, I have no idea what I'm doing. None of us do. We're trying. Really the thing is like this I feel like this isn't something that we need to be. The thing is I do not want to be exceptional in the sense that it's an exception. Like we need some kind of training or this is some kind of calling. But the thing is that I really do believe that this is a transformation for the earth. This is something that we have to learn to share and to care for people that are different from us and listen to people that are different from us. And, a school of hard knocks, maybe. I mean, it's been the streets. I mean, my teachers are my friends on the streets, and I've learned so much more there than I have in any college classroom. But no.
So, John, you have a degree, right?
I do. I went to school. I switched around majors a lot, but I studied religious studies, so world religions at USF here. I did some graphic art stuff, too, but it's not interesting.
So you could have taken the generic route that most of us have taken and got on to a job and, you know, the whole easy life.
Could I have? Maybe. I couldn't stomach it. I've always, it's been growing in me for some time, but I did know for some time it's shaping itself over time, but I just knew I can't do what I think it was Dan Phillips, the video we watched, was talking about, he's talking about the way you eat. I mean, those of y'all that know me, I still eat that way. I don't care if you're there. I've never really cared a whole lot, you know what I mean? And, I don't know, I'd rather flip you the bird than change the way I'm going to live or whatever. But, no, I mean, I don't know. Yes, sure, I had the education maybe to do it, but I couldn't. What's up, man?
I think it's easy to point out some of the flaws in the traditional path, the traditional life
sure.
path. You know, get out of school, get a job, you got to get a job, pay for school loans, then get health care, and all that sort of stuff. So I appreciate that definitely seems flawed, and I would say it is flawed. However, you have to do something to pay the rent, right, or to buy the seed to put in the ground, or, you know, I mean, so where, how are you keeping this afloat financially? Because in this country, that is a system of function that we are.
Yeah, we all of us.
Yeah, you know.
We all hate it, too. But no, we.
I dig it. But.
So, I mean, here's the easiest answer. You look at poor people in every city, in every nation, and what you find is they share and they cram in houses and they make it work, right? And we're similar, so there's like a bunch of us in a very small house in a poor part of town, so the house is not, you know, it's not hugely expensive, and then the more of us that are there, the more of us that contribute. Because we also have a mortgage and bills, and of course those bills are dropping a lot as we cut everything off or whatever, but that isn't necessarily our only motivation. But the more that we're able to share, the more that we're able to do without, it actually impacts your life financially. So I could make an argument for this lifestyle just economically, you know what I mean? Like, you should do this because of it's an economic reason, but I would make an argument for justice. I'd make the argument for relational, like, capacity to have people in your life and not be isolated. Like, I would say there's a million arguments for this lifestyle, but you can make it just economically. But yeah, no, I have a job. I work
yeah, I
right down the street.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, you gotta pay the rent, right?
Yeah, it's a terrible job. I've never had a comma on a paycheck, but I have a job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great job. No, it's a great job. I do what I love, but it doesn't pay. It's terrible in the sense that it. But I work with a community group called The Underground. It's on 7th down the street here. It's like 1300 is our building on 7th, if you guys ever want to swing by. And it's a nonprofit that actually helps entrepreneurial groups start community initiatives. So you're like, I got an idea, something I want to do, and there's a bunch of us, and we're going to go do this thing. But there's so much about starting a nonprofit or doing something like that that's in your way. So that what we do is help take that out of the way. We have like an accountant that helps you just to help groups of people do something with their, like, go and do something in the community until they're on their feet, so they don't have to go do a bunch of paperwork and taxes and all that stuff. We try to provide that. So, yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, man.
I like that you talked about your failures, too, like giving the lawnmower and never seeing it again. Do you have any other failures or weaknesses that you feel that you can share that can be a good lesson?
Come on, man. So that's interesting. I still... wow. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a million stories. I mean, we've had, you take anybody in the house. So we don't necessarily have everyone stay because we have someone like Mama. We got to be careful about who's there, but we have people stay all the time. We have everyone in the house. Like, doors are open, people coming through. Like, Thanksgiving, the house was just crawling with people. And the truth is like, there's a really good chance a lot of these people are casing the joint. Now, we don't have nice things, so it's not that big a deal. But we actually had a month where we had three break-ins in the same month. A couple of them weren't that big a deal, and then one was like a violating ransack of every room or whatever. And we, you know, obviously we knew the people. They'd been over for dinner or whatever. And, you know, it's weird, though. It's like, so it's a negative experience in a way. But, man, these experiences have so shaped our house. Like, because there's a way in which I really think we are addicts as a culture. We're addicts to comfort. We're addicts to material possessions. And so when they're taken, you feel violated. But there's another way in which you feel liberated. I remember that something very, like, thesis of this. One night after that break-in, David, one of the guys that lives with us, was saying, like, he said, I feel awful because I value what was stolen more than the people who stole it, right? And it's hard to answer that question because even the lawnmower, I kind of think it's a victory, you know what I mean?
Well,
it's hard to, so like to me, like a failure is like, man, yeah, I got this cell phone that I thought I needed, you know what I mean? Like it's like I bought something, I feel terrible about that. but so it's just what we call failures and success maybe. So yeah. Jesus. Absolutely. Like, so I don't know what all these churches are doing, but Jesus. Absolutely. And it actually was really difficult to write a talk without doing that because it was, you come to my house, you're like, why do you let these people in your house? Jesus. Well, okay, but why did you let them back after they stole something? Well, because Jesus. And it's really the only answer that I have. And it's the only reason that I do anything that I do. And it is what unites us as a community to love and care for. And he was our model, right, of caring for the poor and the weak and the outcast. And so, yes, absolutely, like from the ground up, we're built on that now.
Do you think, though, that some of those same things or other religions could embrace the same ideas? I mean, that has to be your pathway. But,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we all know that love, right, love is good and love, we should love each other. And I think kind of the idea of doing unto others what would be done unto you is pretty universal. And we have friends. There's another house. Some of the guys are here. There's another house that is not built on faith, but are friends of ours. Are like, we're going to do that too. And they've started a little community, and they're working in a poor neighborhood, and they're sharing with their neighbors. And it isn't built or driven on that. Now, some of them may or may not may have faith or different faiths or whatever, but they're a group of people that are committing to each other and to a neighborhood. And I'm all about it. You know what I mean? I think it's great. Absolutely. Yep.
I consult pro bono with nonprofits locally.
Sure.
To try and help them understand the technology that's coming and how better to use that and social media and that kind of thing. So I'm curious as to what you guys do as part of your nonprofit initiatives there. What's your magic?
Help me. Okay. Help me with that question.
Okay. You said you work with somebody.
What do we do with those groups that are starting
up?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you found some principles that will help a community, help a 501c or C3
sure.
go? You know?
Yeah. Taking everything that's involved in starting a 501c3 and taking it off the table. So I basically say, oh, you want to start a nonprofit? Well, don't. Go do the work that you think you're supposed to do. Because if you're not going to do the work, what's the point of wasting all this time and doing all this stuff? Mm-hmm. And actually, we have one, so we'll cover you. You can do it as with us. And if you need to raise funds, then we have financial services we'll provide. So basically, we try to do everything that you would have to do, all the hard work. Well, actually, it's the easy work in a sense, because what they're doing in the community is actually the hard work. And you know, we've got groups that work with addicts, work with they're taking working with prostitutes in the city here. Girls in the housing projects. I mean, just you name it. You know, there's all kinds of diverse, and it's not stuff we start or come up with, but people come in, they're like, here's what we want to do, and it's kind of like we give permission and try to take every obstacle out of their way and try to find funding to help them. And then as they grow and create something, well, then they actually, then you have they've developed their own technology. We don't they're autonomous. We don't have a method for them. We just say, do it. And if you're any good at it, we got your back, and eventually you'll be off and running like your dad holding your bike before you take off riding. Got
cool, though. You're a 501c3, and so you can be an umbrella for others to come in under.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
So, thank you.
Sure, man.
So is there any one incident in your life that kind of was the tipping point that maybe, you know, was the last drawing you went to do now, even before this?
One incident.
So there wasn't like a day of, you know, wow, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm going to instead?
Not actually, no. I mean, it's been slow and steady. Like, it's weird. It's like, so, yeah, it's been a long, like, snowball. Like, I could think of ways where I remember, like, saying, well, I'm gonna hang out with poor people and, you know, screw everyone else and whatever. So I was, like, hanging out with poor people. And then, like, I remember actually Robbie, my brother-in-law, he goes, one day he, like, yelled at me for, like, throwing a soda can in the trash. I was like, what? He's like, recycle, man. You got to take care of the planet. And I was like, man, whatever, dude. I don't care about that. And, like, I didn't. You know, I was like, I'm doing this thing. And then over time, I was like, man, the planet produces resources, which produces, like, food. And, like, all these landfills, like, they all the waste we produce, like, negatively impact the poor. And because I already care about the poor, I'm like, oh, my bad. You know, it didn't happen that quick. But, like, it took time. And I was like, I realized. So my commitment really was, like, I would say to the poor, like a calling in a way. And then these other things that, like, I've realized that it's all interconnected. The way that we live, it's like a domino effect. And so, so little by little, I've, you know, let go, I guess, and taken seriously everything as best as I can. I'm learning. I'm not any, yeah.
How do you see your template and kind of what you're working on? How do you see that template being translated to a broader Western audience? And I would add to that, how do you see lesser developed nations or LDCs who are trying to come on board with development, how do you see this kind of message translating to them, saying, listen, what we really like to do, what I've learned from your lesser developed state is this sustainability or this less use of resources, but yet they're actively trying to gravitate away from that. And I imagine you saw a little bit of that in Haiti, maybe through, you know, increased packaging or, I mean, I've been to Haiti, Ethiopia, India.
Yep.
I've seen those countries actively trying to come on board with these sorts of things. So
we've definitely spread
across not only countries trying to come on board, but countries that are already operating under the system. How do you see the practicality of that playing out?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's similar to the dissemination question in a way. I one is do it, you know what I mean, and tell, you know, it's like invite people over, share, you know, you can see that things are doable. I think it's funny, I have like a friend of mine who's like, we grew up together, he's older, he's got kids, we just could not be more different in a pursuit of life sense, you know. He runs a construction business and has, you know, a wife and a few kids and a few dogs and lives in a suburb, and like, he's like, people are poor because they don't do anything and whatever, but we, you know, we talk about that, it's a good whatever, but we have these relationships. And and I remember, like, as things have been turning around, there's ways in which he's gone like, man, y'all are kind of smart, like, the way you're living, because things are getting bad and like you're gonna be okay because you have like a little bit of a culture there that, and there's been these like, it's just weird, it's like you don't know something until you see it. And there's been this introduction made. As far as other places, I think one of the big things has been maybe a longevity of vision. So like, it's very hard when you're trying to survive to think about years from now, right? And so, like, also in Haiti, I was there. We were doing some gardening, planting some gardening. But even in our neighborhood, we've had, you know, we do a lot with gardening, and we'll have like a plant grow and like a pepper, and then someone's like, and I'll take that plant. You know what I mean? Like, it would have made more peppers. You know what I'm saying? Like, they'll kind of disappear. And there's a way in which, you know, we've got to learn together. And there's a lot to learn from each other. It's reciprocal, you know. And I think that we all need to learn to maybe listen to each other. And I don't have like some master plan as much as I'm like, you know, I think the best thing really is that we start working together and we start taking less seriously, like having, you know, and sharing. And I don't know, man, just pray and hope, you know.
John,
yeah.
Did you when you started this here in Tampa and you became part, you lived there, did you sense that same community that you saw in the Far East, or do you see yourself injecting that?
That's a good question.
For
America, no, yes and no. There's a lot of things that I think are cult, like, that are common maybe to the poor, poverty or whatever. Some not good, some beautiful, you know, ways that people look out for you. When I first came to our neighborhood, one of my first experiences was working with kids in the neighborhood, like an after-school program. And this kid came in with a Snicker bar. He got a Snicker bar, and like no one else had a Snicker bar. And you could tell it. You didn't come across Snicker bars a whole lot. And I watched this kid break off. And no one told him to. Every kid in that room had to buy a Snicker bar. And he had less than what he was handing out in the end and was fine. Was like no one told him to. And I remember just like feeling like the worst human being on the planet. Like I just witnessed God in this little kid. Like I'd never seen anything like it, you know? And there was something and then I've seen the same thing in Haiti, the same thing in the Philippines. There's a way in which people know what it's like to not have a Snicker bar. Whereas, you know what I mean? Like, when I get a Snicker bar, I'm like, it's your own. You know, two for me, none for you, right? With the Twix and that. But like so we don't share. We don't know how to share. We say, you know, we should share, but we're broken.
Who shares with you?
Who shares with me?
Yeah, I mean, how do you sustain your community? Do people work within your community and then share within
Yeah,
your community?
So there's a few students, but a lot of us, all of us work something.
Yeah.
So one guy has a business that he runs, one guy has a part-time job, another full-time job, and we do what we got to do, you know. And there's been times where we've got people unemployed and we just help float them, like we do it together as a family, you know. Yeah.
Do you guys have couch surfers at your house?
Yeah, that's awesome. We do. We that's just another, like, we're like, well, we want to welcome people, and they're not all from the neighborhood, and we've had just some really cool, we've only had a couple, but we put only men, and we get requests from women, like, constantly, like, we want to stay there. I'm like, well, no, we host men, so, but anyway, we take men,
yeah.
Couch surfers.
I mean, I think that's, like, a really good kind of baby step into intentional communities for people who have a house that's, like, more, you know, standard, American-accepted vision, but, you know, my mom and I did that for quite a while, for a couple years. It started like on a selfish part for me, because I was like, I'm going to create this account because I want to couch surf when I go to Europe and I want people to host me. And it's very like, if you haven't hosted anybody, people don't really host you because it's, you know, everybody scratches each other's back sort of situation. So, but we ended up, we fell in love with it just from having people in our houses constantly. We never had a single bad experience.
It is awesome.
We basically accepted everybody who requested it. We gave people keys to our houses and let them stay there, even on nights when we weren't home. And still nothing bad ever happened. We just like 50 to 60 people over the course of a year or so. So we sort of turned into this like free little hostel.
Yeah.
And we would have, you know, both spare bedrooms like filled with different couch surfers at different times.
That's awesome.
And we would make dinner together, and you know, it's a much cooler experience as far as learning about the culture of a place, living with somebody, you know, in like a Florida style bungalow rather than in a Holiday Inn, you know, hotel room that looks the same everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a sustainable aspect of traveling too. So just turning like portions
That's
of
right.
your life into, you know, letting that be sustainable.
What I really love.
She did lock up the lawnmower.
We don't need it anymore. So what I love though about that model and is hospitality. It's welcoming strangers into your house. So we like do hospitality, but we welcome like our aunt and uncle or whatever, which is not, that's not hospitality. Sorry, it's not. It's like it has to do with others. You know, it has to do with strangers, welcoming strangers. And I think it's a trusted network of people that have this there is already like a system in place, and it's great practice. It's great like introduction to like, who's this guy in our house?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
and you can like serve with intentional communities. Like
pretty
much every house like yours has a couch surfing account and lets people come and stay there.
Yeah.
And especially if you've never had that experience, like.
Yep.
So you think the thing that you were most envious of in Manila was the contentment and the happiness of the people?
Man. Yes, joy like I've never seen in North America.
Yeah.
I've just never seen it. And I'm talking people without anything. I mean, there was sewage. I helped like clean out the sewage, just running through this community and just laughing and just, I mean, something that I still don't know if I know. You know, I have not seen it. And I want it so bad, and it is, they are wealthy in a way that I just had never known. How poor that I was, you know? And yeah, absolutely.
John, do you think if the economy doesn't turn around in North America, that more people in middle class, like themselves, homeless, or without anything that they're used to having, do you think it's possible that they'll ever get to the way that people are in the Philippines, where they learn to appreciate that they're still alive and healthy and band together? Or do you think that once you've lived a life, you know, having a big house and you're not happy without that stuff?
I really hope so, because if not, there will be a lot of bloodshed, because we all can't have that. And so if I say I'm going to have that at any expense and no concern for the other, it will shrink. It won't be 20% consuming 80% of the resources. As resources diminish, it will be 5%, it will be 2%. And if that doesn't change, if people cannot share and let go of power and actually have some humanity and concern for the rest of this planet, it's going to be the ugliest thing ever. I mean, it's the exact antithesis of what I'm talking about.
Don't you think we unteach empathy? I mean, in this country a little bit.
Yeah.
I watch young kids. I watch Share all the time. And you know, my kids share everything, and you know, that's kind of how we are. But I watch these kids become uncreative, they unlearn empathy. It's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, we have bad experiences. We get hurt. We and we do. We say, the things that we say about people we don't know anything about. I mean, it's baffling. So I come from a family in a neighborhood that's, you know, it's a suburb of Tampa, and I go there, and they're my family, my people, and I visit, but I now am an alien in a way, right? Because I've spent the last decade in another place, and things stand out that I grew up with. I never would have heard about others, poor people, other races. You know, it just is. It's not, my family's not an exception. You can walk down the street. It's not my family. It's the friends. It's the neighbors. It is an isolated culture. And you know, it's true on both sides of the tracks. We distrust the unknown, the others, right? I think the poor have a lot more reason to be distrustful, but it's still not good on either side of it. It's not a good thing. And yeah, we definitely look out for our own and for ourselves. I mean, what we're nothing but selfish. Go ahead, man.
I was gonna say the word that I think that describes it: cul-de-sac communes.
Mm-hmm.
You have these cul-de-sacs in the suburbs where everyone's house is facing each other, but they never actually know each other. So maybe as the economy diminishes, they'll actually get to know each other and start sharing each other's stuff instead of having 10 lawnmowers, just one lawnmower.
Well, what's really going to happen is the bank's going to have all the houses on the cul-de-sac. Nobody's going to be out of living them. But someone like me is going to come along and be like, y'all kiss my butt, and I'm taking these houses and bringing all my poor friends or whatever. But
that's funny that you say that, because there's a group out there called the Occupy Movement.
I heard something about that, yeah.
They've been occupying foreclosed homes and sharing the home with the person that used to formerly own it.
Yep.
So maybe we'll see more of that.
Yep. Yeah.
I believe in a concept of today with the internet and the social media, that we have ways of connecting with each other that just never existed.
Yeah, that's
before,
absolutely right.
Okay. And I see us as we're like in this viral environment, and you come tonight and you infected a group of people to some degree. People walk away tonight and go, oh, you're causing us to think about these things. And I think that kind of thing is just, that's how we're going to change who we're evolving to, what we're evolving to, because you're going to quickly find that it's a future where we share and care about each other is going to be much more fulfilling than the alternative. So that's what I hope for us.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, in a future where that exists starts with a life where that exists. I mean, we can't expect that of the world when we are not willing to share or care.
Right.
And the truth is, I mean, we've got to, all of us can hear that and shake our heads, yes, me included. But none of us can look in the mirror and say the ways that we're greedy and selfish. And those are the things that, like, when you can be honest with yourself and allow that to, like, break your own heart, you know, to be like, I'm actually what's wrong with the world. I think it's probably the most sober realization that any of us can have. But it's got to start at home.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna come back to the dissemination question, because it's so important to me, and I hear how passionate you are. And with all due respect to that, I would argue that even if people are inspired, little life change will actually occur. And I hate to be the naysayer, but I know we've all seen like fantastic documentaries. I know we've seen like we've been very inspired, but there's not necessarily that change that goes to the next day or to the next week or to the next month. Maybe a little bit of change, and I do think that that's important. So you're just so deeply passionate about this, and I guess I have to sort of pose that question again. Something like this, I do think. Influential? Are you seeing the people who are coming to your home, the couch surfers, whoever is there, are you seeing them sort of carrying the torch? Because it'd be a shame to not have it.
Sure. Some, yeah. And there are several in this neighborhood. I don't know how many, maybe like 10 other communities that I'm aware of that we're in partnership with and know and living together. We weren't the first, and we're definitely not going to be the last. And I, you know, this is weird. This may not be a great answer to your question, but there's a movie that I saw. I want to say it's called, oh gosh, I don't even remember. Ink? Any of y'all seen Ink? Okay, there's this movie. It's really weird. It's on Netflix, whatever. So there's this guy, it's this weird, surreal movie about dreams. And there's like nightmare beings that give you nightmares and these beings that give you like good dreams. And there's this guy called a Pathfinder, and he's a hilarious character. He's got his eyes taped, and he can't see, and he's like, 1, 2, 3, he's running, right? And his job is going to be to, like, wake up someone who's asleep. But those beings can't do that. They can't actually, like, touch. And they say, how are you going to wake them up? And he just kind of laughs. He's like, shake the shit out of them. And I was like, I love, and that actually is the only answer that I have. So whether that's taking someone and introducing them to poor people, inviting them to come help out at a meal that we do, you know, walking through the boarding house that I hang out on Tuesday nights, come hang out at my house. It's like, and even this, like, in the end, it really is the thing that I'm trying to do. Shake the shit out of y'all. Wake up, you know? Yeah.
So, following up with him, you know, basically you tried to create this call to action tonight and inspire all of us to take a step. And I guess that's my question to you, is we may not be ready to go quite as far as you did, but what's the baby step?
Okay, so this city just passed a ban to ask for help. It's illegal to stand on the corner and say, I'm hungry, please help. That's against the law now. And I would have said during the time is go raise hell at city council. Stand up for people who have nobody on their side. But that's done. And now, you know, thank God there's this like newspaper that's come out, the Epic with Bill Sharp, and I'm really like, glad he did it, because I was like making this little bootleg newspapers. It was gonna happen, but these guys are out selling papers, but it's not everybody. And you know what? There's a lot of people in need, and they're not hard to pick out. Walk in the park across the street. Take a friend and walk 2 blocks that way. It's not hard to see and find need around you. And the truth is, I mean, I would be willing to gamble that a lot of you guys have what we call guest rooms, right? And there's a lot of people with no rooms. Maybe that's too big of a step. Maybe someone needs a ride. You know, it's like, but even if it's like, get some bus passes in your pocket and like give to someone that may actually need some, you know, need some help or transportation or whatever. It's just do something. Get creative. I do not even care. So there's this story it's actually in the New Testament where John the Baptist is asked, he's like, repent, repent, repent. And they're like, what are we supposed to do? And he's like, this is the fruit of repentance. If you have two coats, give one to someone who doesn't have any. So I would repeat the same thing. Of course, Dorothy Day, she's more my style later on, said, if you have two coats, you're a thief. And you stole one of them from poor people who don't have one. I like that version a little bit better. You know, it's a little more of my style. But the truth is, like, how many of you guys have a few things to use, you know? And I know I have a lot of friends on the streets that it's getting cold, need a jacket, need some blankets, need some socks. Mama's helped me pass them out. If you guys want to give them to me, you know, I'll tell you how to get in touch with me, and I can get them to people. You want to come help me, like, serve at a meal, I can tell you how to do that. Just come help out. Sit down, and actually just sit down and eat with someone rather than, like, you know, hide behind a spoon or whatever. But, like, meet somebody, talk to somebody, ask questions, you know? It's like, it's weird. It's so, it's such a strange idea for us to, like, talk to someone that doesn't look like us, you know? And you find out, man, there's so much more going on here. There's so much pain, so much reality, so much history. I've met so many people on the streets that are so much smarter than all y'all. Like, I promise, you know what I mean? And I'm talking with degrees, like multiple degrees, but something happened. Someone died. They lost their mind. They got on some medication that messed them up. You know what I mean? There was an addiction. There was some kind of loss. And it's like, you realize, you hear these stories and it changes. You cannot see, you see people as people. And then you see people in nice clothes and people in not nice clothes and you realize they all take craps. You know, they're all human beings. They all have nightmares and dreams and histories and bad memories, and it's all real. But I don't know, anything. You know what I mean? Like, anything. Seriously. Start. Do something.
Thank you, John. I think that's about time.
Sure. Thank you all.
One of the top challenges for people seeking employment and education is access to reliable transportation. That's why Well Built Bikes refurbishes donated bicycles and provides them to struggling community members. If you have an old or unused bike that you can donate to their cause, it could provide mobility and independence to someone who can't afford a car or a brand new bike of their own. Visit bikeshoptampa.com to learn more, or swing by the Well Built Bike store in the University Mall on Fowler Avenue.